the court will next hear argument in the case of Maher versus Resolution Trust. Mr. Khoury. All right, well, certainly we'll accommodate that. No apologies necessary. All right, Mr. Khoury? Mr. Khoury.
Court, please. My name is Philip Khoury, representing appellant in this case. I think the three questions that are presented by the appellant's brief are whether the FDIC could have transferred the judgment against him, whether it was in fact transferred, and whether it should have been. The appellant wrote to the FDIC and asked how the judgment was transferred in the first place, and was informed in writing that it came down by the regulations, Section C1 of the Board of Directors. Section C.1 specifically states that no asset can be transferred without at least having a 15% return on that transfer. When you take a look at the joint limited liability agreement, the joint venture agreement, the JDC, entered into with a resolution trust, it shows that $28 million of assets were transferred for a little over $3,000. I don't think that barometer was met, and I don't think the judgment was properly transferred. Then we get into the next area, which are four documents presented by Cato Company, the assignee of the judgment, which purports to give them title to this asset. The first document is called an assignment and bill of sale dated September 17, 1996. Douglas Trencham, their affiant, claims that this is the document by which this asset was transferred. Reading the document, it says it's transferred by a contribution agreement dated June 4, 1996. But if you take a look at the limited liability agreement, by definition, the contribution agreement is dated December 13, 1993. So this contribution agreement cannot possibly apply to the same joint venture. Presents to the lower court. After the joint venture agreement terminated by operation of law, by its own terms, it terminated 5 years after December 13, 1993. So I question how this could possibly be an assignment to a now entity that no longer existed. The third document by which they claim title is the most interesting of all. It's called an assignment of judgment. It's dated to September 29, 1999, also 10 months after the termination of the venture by which it was assigned to. It was prepared by the Cato Company, the assignee of the JDC venture, prepared by them, assigned to them, and signed by representatives of the Cato Company. So the Cato Company prepared the document, assigned it to itself, and signed it on behalf of the assignor. The last document is a bill of sale which does not refer to a judgment, but it says this is an assignment, and this comes within the time frame of the joint venture agreement. So it's proper, except that it says that we assign all of our loans. This clearly was not a loan. And finally, I question whether there should have been an assignment at all of this judgment.
Well, let's get back to the first point you made. Do you have any authority for your assertion that a debtor has standing to question whether a judgment was validly transferred under FDIC regulation?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Do you have any authority for that? Any cases you can cite?
I do not have any cases. I only have the document itself, which is attached to our motion for reconsideration, which clearly states that.
Well, the fact that you don't cite any authority in the whole brief other than for jurisdiction, is that to say there just isn't any?
No, I viewed this case as a factual issue rather than a legal issue.
Well, there were no other cases in America where there were facts that were even similar to this, or you could give us some authority for the sort of general propositions you're relying on, because quite frankly, I've never seen a brief with no authority cited.
I did not.
And we deal with factual matters all the time where the facts make a difference, but usually you try to come up with some cases that might be similar to your situation.
I did not do that. The last point I wanted to make was that both the district court in Washington, D.C. and this court, Judge Zagel, has said that Mr. Maher has a vested interest in his deferred compensation, which the Resolution Trust Company is still holding. And if that be the case, I would suggest to the court that he should have the right to offset. And I know that issue was addressed in the lower court, but I brought it up for this time because the monies that we're talking about came out of the same pool, the deferred compensation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Curry. Mr. Borsia.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is, may it please the court, my name is Jim Borsch. I represent the Cadle Company in this case. And, Your Honor, the question about whether there's any authority for his position, that I could not find any authority that he would have these kind of arguments. We have been fighting Mr. Maher for quite a long time on this judgment, and this is now his third appeal, two of which were previously dismissed. Many of the arguments were previously made and, I believe, waived given his prior dismissals of his appeals. The issue is basically simple, is the Cadle Company bought this judgment. We supplied documents showing we bought the judgment. We supplied three affidavits from the FDIC representative who attest to how this judgment was assigned. And Judge Zagel properly found that we were the proper assignee. No one has come after Mr. Maher on this judgment except for the Cadle Company. And for him now to say that he's questioning whether or not we own the judgment is absurd. The fact is that the judgment is owned, and the monies have not been paid by Mr. Maher. We have been forced to go to garnishment. We do have a cross appeal in this case with respect to a garnishment. And I think that's the area where I'd like to focus my argument is after the judgment was entered and we were recognized as a proper assignee, we issued a garnishment on Mr. Maher's employer, and that was Fairfield Bank. That was back, I believe, in early 2000. At some point in time, after that point in time, Mr. Maher raised the fact that the judgment had expired by Illinois law and that Illinois provides for a 7-year judgment period. We had to renew the judgment. You're allowed to do that under Illinois law, and we did renew it. Before renewing the judgment, we had issued a garnishment to Mr. Maher's employer. On August 29th, Judge Zagel, this is again of 2000, granted our motion to revive the judgment. And at that point in time, before then, we had also issued a request for a turnover. Judge Zagel instructed us to reissue the garnishment. We did that. On August 30th of 2000, we served the garnishment back on Mr. Maher's employer based upon the revived judgment. About a month or so later, Fairfield answered the garnishment indicating that Mr. Maher had in fact still been an employee of theirs, and they were indicating they were going to be garnishing his wages, which they did. For some reason, on December 5 of 2000, let me back up a little bit. On November 2nd of 2000, there was a schedule set by Judge Zagel, and it said, and this is on the docket, status hearing held and continued to December 5, no notice. We were not given any notice that that was going to be coming up for a hearing. On December 5 of 2000, there was an order entered, although the order was not entered on the docket sheet, where Judge Zagel granted an oral motion by Mr. Maher's prior counsel, and Mr. Maher's prior counsel is now deceased. He made an oral motion to apparently quash turnover proceedings, and that was granted by Judge Zagel. I was not at that hearing. He didn't have notice of the hearing. Found out about it later. When we moved for turnover on the Fairfield judgment, this order surfaced. And my response to that was, we didn't get notice of this motion. There was no written motion. Apparently it was an oral motion. But even if there was, that was only an order quashing a turnover. It didn't affect the actual garnishment. Once the garnishment is served on an employer, the employer is required to garnish those wages, which Fairfield was doing. It came to a point in time where Judge Zagel clarified his order and said that what he had ordered was that turnover proceedings prior to the revival of the judgment were quashed. And in that case, we were not prejudiced because we had reissued the garnishment on August 30th after the revival. So we asked Judge, and at that point in time, Fairfield had said that we had given Mr. Maher back the garnished money that occurred between September and December, and we stopped garnishing him because of the December order. Our position was, and still is, that was not proper. You're required to garnish up until the time the judgment is satisfied. You're not required under the law to have a turnover proceeding to perfect a garnishment.
Let me ask you this. What case law supports your argument that the district court erred in refusing to order Fairfield to repay Maher's wages to Cato?
I think there is no case law. I could not find any case law on the issue, but there is the statute, which I cited. And the statute is 735 ILCS 5/12-801, which requires an employer, once served a proper garnishment, to garnish those wages up until the time the judgment is satisfied. And in this case, there's no dispute that they got the service of the garnishment. They were actually garnishing the wages. And they made a unilateral decision based upon an order by Judge Zagel where he quashed turnover proceedings before the revival of the judgment. They made a decision at that point in time to give Mr. Maher back what they had garnished and to stop garnishing from that point forward. Mr. Maher, recall, was an officer of the bank, where he was an employer. And we believe that's what influenced their decision, is he was the one controlling what they were doing. He told them this is over. They stopped doing that. But under the law, under that statute, they're required to keep garnishing the wages until the judgment is satisfied.
And if we rule in your favor, what would you like us to ask the district court to do?
Well, to order that Fairfield should have to pay what they should have been garnishing. First of all,
even though Fairfield was not a party here.
Well, Fairfield is correct. Fairfield was a respondent in garnishment in terms of the post-judgment proceedings. They were served the proper garnishment. They're required to file answers to the garnishment with the court, and they answered to the court that they were withholding his wages between September and December of 2000. Then they took the position that because of that order that was entered, they were going to stop garnishing the wages. They should be required, because the law requires them, if you don't garnish wages that you're supposed to garnish, you're responsible for what you should have been garnishing. So in this case, I think there was about almost a one-year period of time between the time that they actually did garnish and gave it back to him and stopped garnishing until the garnishment resurrected itself, I think in 2001, in the summer sometime, that money they are responsible for what they should have garnished. They were served a valid garnishment. That garnishment was never quashed, and they were actually withholding wages pursuant to that and made the unilateral decision to give those back to Mr. Maher. And I think the indication that Mr. Maher being an officer of that bank is what we feel is the reason why they made that decision. It wasn't as if he was a low-level employee. He was a high-up officer, and they made the decision based upon an order that dealt with a turnover proceeding. And turnover is distinct from garnishment. You don't need to have a turnover to have a garnishment. The garnishment was in effect. The judgment was in effect. There was no stay of the judgment. And they're responsible under the law to comply with the garnishment on them. In this case, they didn't do that. And for these reasons, we'd ask that you affirm Judge Daigle with respect to Mr. Maher's appeal and to reverse with respect to the garnishment issue on Fairfield.
Well, in reversing, what, again,
happened? Well, it would actually, I think, allow the district court to enter a judgment against Fairfield for the amount...
Fairfield, now.
Against Fairfield for the amount that should have been retained by them pursuant to the garnishment. They answered the garnishment interrogatories indicating they're withholding approximately $1,000 per month, which was the amount, I think, proper under what the garnishment allowed for under Illinois law. Between September and December, they kept those wages and then returned them to Mr. Maher after that order was entered in December. After December, they didn't garnish at all. And the law would, I think, require them to face that judgment for not following the garnishment that was legally issued and in effect at that time. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Curry?
I didn't want to imply, and I just want to make it clear, that I do not believe that there is a valid judgment against Mr. Maher. Our position is that we do not believe that Cadle is a proper owner of that judgment. That's all I have to say in response.
What about the garnishment? Obviously, if you don't think it's a proper judgment, but that seems to have already been determined.
I don't think the garnishment was proper, but I am not here to speak on behalf of Fairfield.
What on behalf of your client, who apparently had some influence in getting it?
I don't believe he had any influence, but... I guess my position is, if there's a judgment for $42,000, that's all they can get from our client. And if they're asking for another judgment against Fairfield, I don't have a position on that because I don't represent them. I mean, I can't speak for them. I'm sorry.
All right. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.